I was very transparent and said, if you want nice DEI, if you want unconscious bias training and a pride post, I am not your person. But if you want real DEI, meaning that we are hiring more people of color, more people with disabilities, promoting people that are openly LGBTQ plus members, you want real DEI, then I'm the one.
Hey, I'm Devin Michael, and this is Higher Quality, the show where I sit down with the movers and shakers of talent acquisition to hear their talent triumphs, their hiring horror stories, and genuine opinions about the recruiting industry.
All right, so today's episode is with Tyra Duren, who is the Director of Talent Development for Lawrence Group, who is in the construction slash architecture slash development space. She kind of supports all facets of people. So talent development could sound like training and courses and things like that, but she actually oversees everything talent in that company. And it's a big deal. She's doing some really great things, but specifically we dove into her experience with DEI, which if you've been listening to me, you're hopefully know that I'm super, super, super supportive of any DEI effort, especially the good ones. And she's doing a good job, and she shows how she's doing it, how she's thinking about it, strategizing on it, and what a good company looks like from a leadership level to support what she's doing. And I think that's even more important. So if you're in that zone of thinking about how to make your space better for DEI, definitely listen in, but let's jump into the show. All right, Tyra, I am super grateful and super excited to be chatting with you today. Thanks for joining us, because I think what we're going to talk about is incredibly important. Sneak peek at DEI for those who are listening, but we'll get there when we get there. First and foremost, I think the world deserves to know who they're listening to. So I want to give it to you to do your intro, because I know that I could say your job title, Director of Talent Development at Lawrence Group, and people be like, what does that mean? Why don't you tell the world who you are, what you do, and give a little bit more color than I could give?
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Devin. So Tyra Duren, as you said, Director of Talent Development for an architecture, real estate development, and construction firm, with the 40-year brand being Lawrence Group. But I actually assist all three firms that are a part of Lawrence Group. So there's New and Found Real Estate Development and Investment, and then also Integrated Construction that are in partnership with Lawrence Group to make this overall enterprise. And so I run talent for all three businesses. And it's funny because when you hear talent development, you think, okay, bring in the people and then do some training and development courses. But really, it's the life cycle, the entire employee experience for the entire firm, bringing in talent, sourcing talent, working with them over their overall career role. So really, it's more like people and culture without the legal compliance of HR, because we outsource that piece. But it's all about the employee experience. So if you want to call me an employee experience architect, it's really more of that. And something I've been doing for almost 11 years now. Started off my career as an employee relations intern at Convergys Corporation, which is now Concentrix. That's in 40 countries, 6 continents. And so moved to like a training role, then went nonprofit, then went sports to the St. Louis Cardinals, where I touch every realm of HR, from benefits to DEI. That's where I learned the bulk of my HR background. To back to Concentrix as an HR business partner and global DEI manager, and now here with the Lawrence Group. And so it's been a great journey. People are my passion. Creating spaces for people to be their best selves is my passion. As a child, I thought that was being an attorney, but honestly, it was my mother who said, hey, you should really look into HR, and that not being really a popular term until here in like the last 10 years of really advocating for people. And it's been the best decision, because I get to sit on the other side of the table and advocate for people of color, advocate for people with disabilities or a less of a leg up in life. On this side, right? It's great that you have attorneys that's fighting in the courtroom, but how do I fight for people in corporate America? How do I fight for people for jobs and fairness and pay equity? So that's who I am. I call myself a change agent because I take the advice of my mentor. Shout out to Ann Sini, as a big HR guru, that if you are not willing to be fired in HR, you should not be in HR. If you are not willing to lose your job for doing what's right, then you should not be doing this work. And so sometimes I have to have difficult conversations, fight for employees when I'm the only one doing it at the executive table. But that's what I signed up for. And if that's what we need, I mean, there's champions in the marches, but there also needs to be champions in the office. And so I pride myself for being one of those champions.
I'm glad that you learned the most in the sports one, because that's where I was trying to go anyway.
Cool.
So why do you think it was there that things shifted for you? Like, why at St. Louis Cardinals? Was there a certain different outlook that they had, or like, what was that that opened up the doors to DEI for you?
It was my leader, having a Black woman as my leader, being okay with exposing me and not feeling some type of way about herself. That's a whole nother dynamic, is when leaders don't want to expose their people too much because they're not confident in themselves and feel like their employees are going to outperform them. But she challenged me in ways that I had never been challenged before. That's what I needed, and not to be handheld. And so exposing me to sitting at the table with the president, because it was some stuff I would say, hey, the CFO reached out to me and asked me to meet with him on this report. You want to go? And she's like, for what? I don't need to go. You know your stuff. And so it pushed me to be where I am today and just being exposed to a lot of things. I remember we had the person that was over benefits exit the organization. And so we backfilled it, but that person decided that it wasn't right for them after about 90 days. And the manager was out on maternity leave. And so her being the vice president of HR called me into her office. She said, you're the most senior person on my team that I got. You got to jump into benefits. And I almost had a conundrum. I said, absolutely not. I said, I've never touched it. I don't know anything about handling people's 401k. And then if you know anything about like professional sports, you have the sports team's benefits. And then I had to deal with MLB's benefits. So I got to work. Anytime a guy gets called up from minor leagues, his benefits change. Now we've got to work on that transition from minor league to major league baseball. And so that's happening throughout the year. You got to keep up with what's going on in the game. I have never been so nervous. And just, I'm like, I can't do this. Can you find somebody else? And she straight asked me, she said, you want to be chief people officer one day? And I said, I do. She said, you better get in there and learn the benefits. She said, you're going to have to get in there and learn those benefits. And I did it. It was a really stressful time, but it was pivotal part of my career, because now how do you fight for employees to have better benefits if you don't understand them? How do you fight for policy change and benefits? How do you know when employees are not getting the best benefits if you don't understand it? So it was a very critical time for my career and taught me every aspect of what it means to be a people advocate in the workplace. You got to understand every part of it. You got to understand how compensation plays a part. And you have to understand how to talk the language of both sides. This is a key thing that a lot of employees and places don't understand, is how to speak the executive language. And so when I say that, I mean that if an employee is passionate about adding 8 weeks of paid maternity leave, or employees need volunteerism time, whatever that may be, they go in there with just passion. This is what we're going through. This is what we need. This is the support we need. You need that? But what's the business case? Why does it make sense? Make it make sense. C-E-N-T-S. As much as it makes sense to you. And so I break this down now for even employees when I'm dealing with BRGs, the business resource groups and employee resource groups. Like, it's great that you have this passion, but we've got to make the business case from a money standpoint. And sometimes it gets frustrating on both ends, but when the executive team understands the employees and you have a person that can help with the languages, it can help drive change. It can help drive change. So that's where I learned how to do that. And that's why it was the most pivotal part. On top of that, you have a sport like baseball.
I know where this is heading.
You have a sport like baseball. You have a white conservative sport trying to do DEI.
Right.
Wanted it, and we were trying it, but then you have to tread the line of fans thinking that DEI was political. You have this other dynamic, especially in St. Louis. One of the things that we thought we were doing well is this Pride Night at the ballpark. Oh, it's going to be great. Only to find out that the organization that we were partnering with, people were saying that they weren't inclusive to Black LGBTQ+. So now we had a whole nother realm. It was so many pieces to break down. You had conservative red state of Missouri that didn't think we should be doing it at all. So any type of challenge that it was to come up against, baseball presented it, especially in DEI. So it was a great learning experience for me in those 3 years.
Yeah. Fast forward to now, it sounds like a hell of a lot of exposure to every facet of people. And then secondly, it's like now you're in probably another place where it's harder to DEI, right?
Yeah. And you know what? The good thing is the company that I work for. So when I interview with them, I looked on the website and I said, hey, like, you guys look like you have culture that it's great. You're doing some fun things. I checked out your social media. Great. I looked at your leadership team. And there is nobody that looks like me. What's the resolve? And I appreciated the executive team saying, you are absolutely right. We need help. I said, that's half the battle, is admittance. Right. Saying we got to get it right, but we don't know how. And so I was very transparent and said, if you want nice DEI, if you want unconscious bias training and a pride post, I am not your person. Just don't hire me. We don't even have to waste each other's time because I'm going to get on your nerves as soon as I get in the door. I said, but if you want real DEI, meaning that we are hiring more people of color, more people with disabilities, promoting people that are openly LGBTQ+ members, you want real DEI, then I'm the one. The thing that I appreciated the most about my company is that they supported me every step of the way. And so I presented this big DEI plan within 6 months of being there, expecting for it to be cut in half, expecting the budget to be cut in half, expecting no control. And they said, yeah, great, let's do it. And so it was shocking, but it works. It works. And so what I've noticed, architecture and construction have a lot in common with baseball. Because a lot in the Latinx community, you still see baseball, but you don't see the little minor league baseball teams in the Black communities anymore. You don't see that. Everybody is driving them to either little league football or basketball. And so it's not diverse from a field standpoint enough because it's not a lot of representation starting from childhood. The other piece is a lot of people weren't even thinking about it as a career. When I would tell people I work for the St. Louis Cardinals, they would say, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's a whole business behind the team. Like, you got to have sales, you got to have marketing, you got to have HR, you got to hire coaches and staff. Like, oh, I didn't even think about it. It's the same way with architecture and construction. How many of us are talking about architecture? How many of us are really talking about construction? We're telling them to go to school to be engineers. That's helping a little bit. But architecture, I'll go ahead and throw engineering and construction in general. We've got to start talking about it earlier. So there is a small percentage of Black and brown students going into those majors. And so it's all going to start with some pipelining. So what we've started doing as an organization is starting at elementary, junior high. Let's go into the elementary and junior high schools. Let's bring some architects that look like them, female architects in there, female project engineers into those schools and start even introducing it to them, doing fun projects to say, I didn't even know I could design the Starbucks in my neighborhood. Once you do that, now you have some interest. Then we moved into partnering with the high school, bringing them in for high school day, letting them do similar projects. Watching them, we've even started hiring high school interns for the summer. they're in there designing 3D models. They don't know how to do that much, right? Because they're not in college for it, but at least they're sitting with somebody on a daily that they can see what it looks like, see and get a feel for being a true architect or a construction engineer. That way it piques interest over time. So with this industry, we've got to start DEI early because we can do the training, but if the bodies aren't in there or in place, then what's the training for, right? We've got to start putting people into positions. I remember, and I won't say any names, there was a higher up person at a company because I do a DEI report for them in order to work with our firm. And I was talking to him for the first time on the call, and he said, "Can I ask you a question?" He said, "You sound like me." And I got what he was asking. And I said, "Yes, I'm an African-American woman." And he said, "Let me ask you a question. They got you over hiring? They had you over all hiring?" I said, "Yes. Yes, sir. I'm over all hiring." He said, "I have never in my 40 years of architecture seen a Black person over hiring, over all hiring. Like, you get the say-so of who comes to the table." That opened my eyes in the first 6 months of being there. He said, "Because I don't think you know how pivotal that is for the industry to have somebody on the other side, having a say-so into who gets hired." There is a gentleman that told me his story. He's a senior associate with our firm now, Mr. Lorenzo Savage, who was the project manager and designer of the Casino Queen in East St. Louis, Illinois. One of the oldest casinos, has been there about 40 years. And he said, "I could never get interviews. I could never even make it to the interview phase." I'm saying, how can the project manager of a multi-million-dollar project that we see every day crossing the river, it's right there, not be able to get an interview in a St. Louis firm? And so it's things of that nature in this business that help keep me going, even on the tough days, to say, okay, you know, I got to stick it out. Somebody has got to do it. Somebody has got to be on this end advocating for women in leadership, even when it comes to some of my women that have come through and said, "Hey, I didn't even get an interview for most senior level positions." And so that's the piece that's been helpful with my firm specifically, is that I had the leadership buy-in and the leadership support 100% through and through.
Going back to that guy, just real quick, did that make you mad when you're talking to him?
Absolutely. I was floored. I looked at him. I remember the day his application came through, because I'm on LinkedIn.
You were interviewing this guy and he said that?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And
okay.
So I remember when I was sitting there, we had this big project coming up the pipeline where we were designing these movie theaters across California. And LinkedIn sent me a message saying, "Lorenzo Savage Sr. applied for this position. I mean, I need somebody like yesterday." So I immediately go in and I'm like, holy crap, he project managed the Casino Queen. I'm looking at the designs and he designed multiple movie theaters across California. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I need him in here yesterday. I sent it to my COO and he's like, "Yeah, get him in. Like, we got to talk to him." And when we interviewed him and hired him within like 3 days, he was hired within like 3 days and started within like 7. And he said, "Do you know, like, I would apply to places around St. Louis for years and would never get an interview." And I'm like, that is insane. And I was so angry. I was so angry, yet blessed. This is why we have to work. This is why we need more change advocates to be in a position to make a difference in these jobs. I get it. Like, it's great to have people that say, "No, I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to do my own thing." That's great. That's awesome. Some people have asked, like, "Why won't you go start your own HR firm?" It's cool to consult, but consulting doesn't make the difference that this does. You actually get to see what's changing on this end. I was angry. I was angry, but satisfied at the same time that I could also be a part of something that changed in his career.
Did the higher up guy make you mad when he said that? The one that was like, "Never in 40 years have I seen a Black person over hiring."
You know what? Yes. I mean, it was more shock than anything.
Did he say it in a way that was like, "This is wrong"? Because his first comment where he's like, "You sound like me," that piece to me is like a microaggression. But the other piece just sounds like a matter of fact statement, you know?
Yeah. His was more shock. And that's how I took it. It's like, there is a firm that allowed a person of color to have this much say so. He said, "I dare you," he said, in this 4 years, he said, "I've gotten out of just straight architecture into doing more of DEI work for architecture." Because he said, if you look within a 150-mile radius, you won't find a Black man as a principal of an architecture firm. And you won't. I have yet to see one even going to the architecture firms, the conferences and things of nature that we go to. So he was telling the truth. He was old enough to be my parent. So I think it just came from a place of shock. It's like, I can't get over this. It's like, so do you make recommendations? It's like, no, the applications that come through, I sift through those applications and they go through. And if I don't care for someone, I have yet to be questioned by leadership if I say, we should not hire this person. Honestly, sometimes it shocks me because it hasn't happened yet, but they trust me. I think it was just coming from a place of shock for him.
Josh, I get the beauty of playing devil's advocate in this moment. So I'm going to ask it, but I know mostly why. But I like to hear this answer, which is, why does it matter? Let's make it make sense for people, CENTS. Like, why does any of this matter?
I'll tell you this. We had a pivotal part of my career where we were going after at HBCU to design. And they went with a more diverse firm. And we couldn't be bad. We understood. It matters because especially in things like HBCU culture, I came from HBCU. You have got to understand the culture in order to even design a space for the culture. How do you design a space that inspires students to continue their degrees and their educational journey if you don't understand that journey? If you don't understand that some of them are there by the grace and that is it. Some of them are there because that school took a chance on them when no other school would. HBCU culture is rich. And so we did. We had those conversations and they allowed me to voice my opinion and say, hey, if you don't have any HBCU architects or at least people of the culture that can help pitch these ideas, it's going to be hard to break into this type of work. Even designing spaces in predominantly minority neighborhoods. How do you design a hospital in a space or a clinic in a space where these people had to drive 40, 45 minutes to get any type of healthcare before? So it matters because you're designing space that a culture will dwell. New York just launched like a recovery center for mothers who just gave birth. It's like a transition. And so how do you do that if you don't have any female architects at the table who have went through that? How do you do that? You're just making decisions about something that you maybe do some research on, but nobody knows that as well as somebody that has went through that. So having a diverse workforce for those industries are going to be important.
So it makes me think of this time, because I have a question following this story that I've experienced when I was very young, elementary, but I was one of the few Black people in my class. It was somewhere around Martin Luther King Day or something like that. And my teacher, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but my teacher asked me to come up and talk about Martin Luther King in front of the whole class and like singled me out. And I was like, wow, like looking back on that, that's crazy that that happened. Again, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but that's what I'm thinking. Okay, in that situation that you just mentioned, like, how do you design for the culture if you don't have any in your company? From an employee experience perspective, like, how do you manage against that feeling? It's like, I'm only here for the HBCU designs. Like, how do you like prevent that feeling of like, I think it's good. Like, I think that's the right move, is to have people that are designing for their cultures. But at the same time, I'm like, it could feel like you're getting singled out in a way.
Yeah, that's a great point. They are not hired for that. Don't hire anybody for that. And this was the point I even made in that room. Don't hire anybody for that. Already have them in place doing other stuff. And then you can pull from that knowledge. Don't wait until crunch time or this is a specific project. Oh, now we need, no, we should have it anyway. It's needed anyway. Diverse minds and different thought processes and coming from different experiences in life are needed anyway. And so that's the piece of not picking them because of that. It's making sure that you already have diversity in place and say, hey, these people are working on other projects. Everybody is working on other projects. We have great minds across the firm that we can pull together. And then people with different expertise, this is what we do, right? I'm working with somebody who's really good at higher education in general. But I'm working with this architect. I'm bringing in these two because both of them graduated from Hampton. So they understand the culture pieces. It's having a conglomerate of people and excellent minds that can approach a project from a holistic standpoint and not just bringing in people just because, oh, yeah, you went to HBCU. We want to start going after HBCU as a target. Now, that is targeting. And that's what we're not going to do. But the thing is, have these people already in place. Have diverse mindsets already in place.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. I got to transition because I'll stay on this forever. But before I do that, I think there's one question that I think is worth talking through, which is, in your mind, how would someone listening to this that's like, I want to be this. Like, I want to be like Tyra. I want to be a change agent. Mm-hmm. In the simplest of ways, how should they start?
I will say the best place to start, if you don't go and get a degree in like HR, stay down until you come up. Nobody wants that advice, but I'm telling you, any senior HR person is going to tell you if you are in another career and you want to transition over or if you want to start, the HR pay and entry-level jobs are bad. They are not good. Like, they are not good. But it added perspective as I got older and more mature in my career that it's because you're right there with legal. If I make a mistake from an HR standpoint, it could cost the company thousands of dollars. It's some stuff that dealing with people's 401k, you could even be charged. So people can't put you into this 96,000 six-figure role off the bat. You got to stay down and be able to learn some things before you move up into your career. So I would say if you're making a career transition, look for like those people coordinator roles, specialist roles, assistant roles. Those are really good. You also don't want to start off at the top trying to learn something in the heat. Once you get to like director level roles, you are in the heat, and manager roles, you're in the heat. So it's really good to get a great mentor and start in the lower level roles while you can learn. I also say this, and some people look at me sideways, find a really, really, really big company to start in. I know it sounds crazy, but really big companies have it pieced out. So I came from Convergys. Convergys had 275,000 employees, 40 countries, 6 continents. So they had recruiting with literally all they would do is talent acquisition, just recruit. You had employee relations that literally only did investigations and employee issues. You had benefits, you had DEI. But even DEI was split into volunteerism and then it was really split into minor pieces. That way you get a good idea of the small pieces that make up like people. It wasn't until I got to the Cardinals where you had to be everything. It was 5 people, a 5 people department for 1,300 people. That is like you hit the ground running. You might be doing benefits tomorrow. But if the hiring person needs help, you need to jump in and do that as well. And so I feel like it's not as overwhelming if you start off in a bigger company. That way you can learn and see what you really want to go into. When I tried to go back to a bigger company, I was bored. So I needed to get back into a role that I am now where I can touch everything.
Gotcha. All right. Let's do these 5 questions.
All right.
I try to read them as fast as I can. I'm not really that fast of a reader is what I've learned. And then you just answer as fast as you can.
Cool. I'm ready.
All right. One person that has changed your life in talent acquisition.
Anthony.
Yep. Figured. Most challenging role you've ever had to recruit for.
Architect in Austin, Texas. Hardest market to recruit for. Austin is crazy competition.
I see. Where do you go to stay updated on the latest trends and changes in the TA landscape?
A company called Zwei, because TA is completely different in architecture, as well as some SHRM, HRCI things, but mostly Zwei because they're specific to my industry.
What's your go-to interview question if you could only pick one?
Why should we choose you?
I like that one. That's a first for me. And then last question, what's a common talent acquisition activity that needs to die?
References. Like, I get it. But if you ask 10 different people, you're going to get 10 different versions of me. You don't know what they did to get that out of me. I mean, you got to put some things into perspective. Like, I get it. Sometimes it works out where it's like, okay, I'm not going to take a chance on this person because it's just repeatedly bad. But sometimes you got people that, yeah, you're not telling the pieces that you did, the full story. So I'm not a big fan of references.
That's different than the typical reason, which I like your reason. So usually people are like, no one's going to give you a bad referenceable person, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is also true. Well, Tyra, this has been awesome. And I know that everyone's going to appreciate this one and probably want to stay connected with you. And so how would you prefer people to stay in touch with you, keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I respond to messages. I'm not a ghoster. I got ghosted early career, so I don't do it. I'm making my business to reach out to people who are in college and stuff. I respond because I feel some type of way about it. So it may take me longer, but I will respond. So find me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, you heard it here, folks. Find her on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn too. I might respond. You might get through the friend request zone. We'll see. But anyways, if you liked this episode as much as I did, make sure to like, follow, subscribe, whatever you are listening, because more are coming and we're excited about this podcast. So again, Tyra, thank you so much for joining me. It's been great and I've learned. And I think that's always the goal for me, is I just want to learn. And so appreciate you.
Thanks. You too.
We'll see everyone next time.
Thanks.